Welcome to our February 17th edition of Saturday Simulcast, brought to you by the Union Club Hotel, the Boiler Up Bar, 811 Bistro, and Leaps Coffee. We appreciate them and all that is going on campus and their great facility at the Union Club Hotel. Want to also look forward to our guests for today. And of course, that will be Mike Carmen and Tom Dienhart. We'll talk about Purdue basketball, a little Purdue football, a little Purdue women's basketball. And then, of course, Orlando Eitan, who will be hosting kind of a sale of all of his collectibles in the Big O Sports Room at Bruno's on Saturday from 10 to 4. And then finally, Tim Spiker, who's a former Purdue walk-on basketball player, played with Matt Painter back in the 90s, a leadership guru. We'll talk about leadership in the Purdue basketball team and other forms of leadership. So enjoy. It's a cold day in West Lafayette, but a good day to hopefully enjoy the rest of this simulcast. Thank you.
Don't make things too complicated. I mean, Purdue had 7 first half turnovers and they fell behind and they had 3 second half turnovers and they pulled ahead. I mean, we all know that's a big thing for this team is they have to take care of the ball because they have to get shots up. I think they had 17 offensive rebounds last night, 16 second chance points. Those numbers just help them push over the edge, but they are a dynamic offensive team, either from three or inside. And if you don't turn the ball over, you can't score. Or as Painter said last night, you can't rebound a turnover. That's a big deal for them. It'll be a big deal for the rest of the year. But good contributions from across the board. When you look at it, Mason Gillis, and I can't remember if the Big Ten does a sixth man of the year. You'd be hard pressed to find a better sixth man in the Big Ten and in the country with his production level right now. So they're getting it from different places. You know, Braden Smith continues to elevate every game into one of the nation's top point guards. If he's not already there, and I'm glad he was on the Naismith watch list. I think he'll get on another one here shortly. They're a good team. They're better than they were last year. They continue to kind of prove it. They weathered Minnesota's hot shooting last night. There probably are concerns defensively for Purdue, but when you have the offensive punch that they have, you feel like they can kind of overcome that and deal with that. So it's a good test for them because I don't think they've been behind by double digits since Nebraska. And, we've seen – throughout the year, they come up against adverse moments. And for the most part, other than Northwestern and Nebraska, they've responded to it. Whether it's Zach Edey on the bench for extended time with foul trouble or just being behind at halftime, they've kind of picked themselves up and, accomplished the deal.
Yeah, no doubt. It was an impressive second half performance, and a little bit of adversity goes a long way. Tom Dienhart, you used to probably sit on your driveway and shoot free throws at a higher clip than the Boilermakers have. It's interesting. I did a little ciphering last night, which is nothing great, but Purdue shooting 63% in its last 4 games in Mackey, but away from home, 77%. Yeah. I understand it kind of comes down to a couple guys. I know Lawyer was 1 for 3 last night, but it really comes down to Edey and Trey Kaufman Wren, the free throw shooting problems. I know you got to watch the game on the tube last night, but talk about just that whole notion of anxiety, free throws. Maybe it's fans' anxiety. Is this something that, as Matt Painter and others say, you don't try to miss them, but Purdue is causing themselves a little bit of gnashing of teeth from the free throw line, especially at home.
Yeah, just leaving a lot of points there, obviously, at the line. And I think Zach Edey missed 6 free throws. I think he was 8 of 18 from the field. Just off on that touch right around the basket. But yeah, Alan, to your point about the free throws, it's going to cost you maybe at some point, right? Being in the NCAA tournament, we've all witnessed it. And the margin for error is so slim, and you got to cash in on your opportunities. And Alan, you noted the trend here. I think someone broke it down too. it continues to spiral downward for Purdue as far as their accuracy goes overall. So, and Zach Edey especially was so almost such a money man for such a big guy early on shooting free throws, and he's really sort of struggled to have a consistent touch of late. And yeah, something you got to get sorted out. I know the team practices it obviously often. And another point, I think Alan, you mentioned adversity. Mike mentioned adversity, and I think that's the ultimate, is to see what you're really made of. When you get punched in the nose and your knees are wobbling, you feel like the world's collapsing on you. What's your response? And that may be an overdramatization of last night, but to come back, trail by 8 at halftime, win by 8, fall behind by 10 at one point in the second half, to keep steadying yourself against a Minnesota team that was shooting lights out, says a lot. And sometimes it's, fans don't like those nail biters, those harrowing conclusions or close games, but it's such a good experience for players to continue to have to navigate those types of situations. I think against Alabama too, they were down by 12, maybe even the second half. That was another team that shot lights out against Purdue. So again, a nice test, better than a blowout. Now they go to what, Ohio State Sunday, 1 p.m. CBS game. And you look at the schedule, guys. I mean, there's a chance they could win out. I think that game in Champaign is going to be a tough one, obviously, against the Illini. But Purdue's got, what, a 2-game lead on the Illini. I think a 3-game lead on everybody else. So they have a buffer here. What are the Buckeyes going to have too, right? With the coaching change, and how's that going to affect their personality and their want to, I guess. So I'm not saying it's a trap game, but it's going to be interesting to see what the Buckeyes have. And boy, that's been an arena that's been tough over the years for Purdue to win in, for sure.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see with Chris Holtmann's departure in the middle of the year, or not in the middle, toward the end of the year, but just a strange situation. Not surprising that they got rid of him, Mike. It didn't surprise you at all from that standpoint, but did it surprise you it was early, before the season was over? I mean, or do you think something happened, or did I miss the memo on what did happen?
Well, I think the memo is what happened is they've underachieved the last 2 years.
Yes, no question.
And they brought in really good recruiting classes, and they've had some guys leave for the portal. So the thing that surprised me is, A, the timing. You just don't expect something like this in mid-February. Why not let it play out? And the other part, because of the dynamic at Ohio State with Gene Smith leaving at the end of the academic year, and they've already hired a new AE. I've read some stories of, how it's going to work, but just the fact that it was allowed to happen.
Yeah.
Going AD pulls the trigger on firing a coach, and now the new AD is going to help hire the coach, but Gene Smith's going to play a role in that. It just seems really, really weird to have it go down that way. But I do think probably Goldman was going to be gone at the end of the year. So if you know that decision, then it's never just one game. This is something that's been building, whether it's this year and the carryover from last year. So from that standpoint, it wasn't a surprise. Now, where does Ohio State go? I mean, they're not going to go hire the top assistant at whatever. They're going to get a proven coach with the Big Ten. My theory is with the Big Ten and the SEC aligning in football and having all these committees, that the Big Ten is seen as a safe spot for coaches when you look at resources and stuff. So I think Ohio State will have a lot of interest from sitting head coaches that have a record, that they want to get their seat at the table before whatever happens in college athletics is going to happen here, where they want to be the place that has, the NIL money, the resources for staffing, the ability to recruit, facilities and all that. And Ohio State can offer that. I think there should be a lot of interest from sitting head coaches right now for that job.
That's
just
a good
a great
point.
Job. Great job. Great job. You guys know the history there. Fantastic job.
Yeah, Bruce Weber always said best job in the Big Ten. He said,
Think about this. The two worst teams in the Big Ten are Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened? And what's going to happen to Juwan Howard too? I can't believe Michigan is as horrible as it is, and Ohio State struggled too. Again, I got so many memories of the Buckeyes beating the Boilermakers, and you think the roster of players, Jim Jackson, going back to Herb Williams, Troy Taylor,
I'm down the line.
I mean, Greg
Ronnie
Oates,
Stokes.
Yeah, Clark Kellogg. I mean, they're these guys that just in the titles, the Final Fours, unreal talent, unreal, just unreal support over there. So I think Mike's right. That's a plum job. There's going to be a long line for it.
Yeah,
Well,
I think it, go
the
ahead,
other thing
Mike.
about Ohio State and Michigan this year is Purdue kind of catches a break.
They
They
did.
go to Ohio State, and then they go to Michigan,
Yeah.
which in normal years, those would be, if you got
Yeah.
a split out of that, you'd be really happy. But now Purdue has a golden opportunity to win both of those games on the road and solidify itself in chasing the Big Ten championship. So the schedule's kind of, I think, going to work in Purdue's favor this year to kind of get another Big Ten championship.
18-2 or 17-3, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it's realistic. It's interesting, though, Ohio State, of course, Michigan's well under 500. Ohio State 14-11, but 4-10 in the Big Ten. And as Matt Painter said last night, and we all know, Ohio State's got talent. I mean, there is talent there, and they can provide some issues for Purdue on Sunday. It makes you wonder if they can do it for 40 minutes and what their emotional state will be. I
Yeah.
mean, that seems to me to be the big question, Mike. I mean, do you see a game that's I mean, it's interesting with Purdue too. I mean, Edie, as good as he's been, and he has been great, without question, but shooting, he's had two or three games here in a row, or three out of the last four. We shot under 50% from the field, which is an interesting dynamic for him. I guess first address the emotion of Ohio State, but then second, Zach Edey. I know he's not going to be sitting on the bench because he's not playing well, but he's not, maybe, is it Purdue not playing at its best yet? I actually asked you three questions in one statement. So go ahead, Mike. Well, fire away, my friend. I have a terrible habit of doing that. Go ahead.
Most coaches say, "Well, I answered the last one first." I
I tend to do that. Sorry.
don't. I know there's going to be a little bit of emotion involved, but you never know with coaching changes. Were the players happy that there's a change made, or
Yeah.
are they mad that a change is made, or have they already thought about getting in the portal? So, you don't know that, but there will be a wave of emotion, I think, probably early. If they really like Chris Holtmann, then maybe they're going to go out and play for him a little bit harder. But with Zach, he's getting the shots he normally gets. Are they calling every foul now? Probably not. But I do agree with Tom. The free throw situation, along with the turnovers, are a little bit concerning as far as when you get a tight game and being able to get to the line and hit that. So, Zach, he doesn't shoot well, but he's still an intimidating presence there. And you got to choose if you're going to play man to man straight up, or you're going to bring a double. I think we saw a combination of both last night with Minnesota playing him single coverage, but also bringing the double team. Zach had some turnovers last night out of the double teams, and that's a little bit of concerning too. But I think Zach will be fine. Once he kind of gets comfortable, gets back to being comfortable again, and kind of get in a rhythm offensively, then I think he can weather whatever's going on right now.
All right, we're not gonna cry for Zach Edey and his ability at this point. Four turnovers for Zach Edey last night. That was interesting, boy. Tom, and from your viewpoint last night, one thing about Minnesota, Ben Johnson seems to have, and Brian talked about this as well, really have things going all the way. I'd like to be Mike Karman's agent, but secondly, I would like to be Cam Christie's agent. He is really a good looking guy in terms of a player, and yet Ethan Morton shut him down in the second half. I thought one of the best things about the game for Purdue, at least if you're a Purdue follower, is the fact that Ethan Morton played well, but also Caleb First came in and did something for the first time in quite a while. And I think his confidence seemed to be, at least watching the body language, seemed to really rise up. What other thoughts do you have on that subject?
Yeah, I was going to mention first, you're right, when Zach got those fouls early on and Caleb came in, I think he finished with 5 points. I think, and he got a hoop right away when he hit the court. So, you know what, man, it is hard when you're not playing. It's just discouraging if you're a player. Maybe I'll speak for myself, but it's not as hard to keep your head in the game. You can start feeling sorry for yourself. Woe's me, I'm not playing. But that doesn't seem to be the case with any of these guys, right? Some of them had to check their ego and their pride at the door. Mason Gill's coming off the bench.
Yeah,
Yeah,
unreal.
Mike talked about him. I think he's my favorite player on the team. The ultimate Swiss Army knife. You typically know what you're going to get from every night. He can do it all, man. And that's the guy I would take to a back alley brawl with me too. So yeah, it's again, first was big, and Mike talked about the continued great play, Braden Smith. Boy, people always ask me, well, how's this Purdue team different than last year's Purdue team? Well, there you go. Braden Smith. I mean, Fletcher Loyer has been way too up and down. But Braden Smith, boy, you can typically count on getting a pretty solid game from him every time out. Talked about Mason Gillis too. Lance Jones has been pretty consistent as well. And again, you can tell this team gets along and likes each other too. Ethan Morton, we have to put his post-game pressers on satellite radio now or subscription radio, but that's another guy, he seems like he's embraced his role. Maybe he's thrilled with that role. But again, that's another guy who's know your role, right?
Yeah.
He plays it with pride and he plays it hard. And again, that's not everybody wants to do that in life. And again, I take my hat off to those guys for being able to again buy into that whole team concept, to use some coach speak there.
All right. I'm gonna give you a warning here, Mike, and ask a women's basketball question, and Tom will tell a little football on our last question of this. Mike's other avocation, the last word, which you can subscribe to, and it's excellent coverage of and he's been doing it for centuries, if not decades, for Purdue women's basketball and Purdue sports in general. But make sure you check that out. But Purdue has won two out of his last three. They're not going anywhere, maybe nowhere in the postseason, barring a miracle run in the Big Ten tournament. And yet they have another home game on Saturday. Then again, are things looking a little bit up just based on the fact that they scored what it went on a 27-0 run, four touchdowns, missing an extra point against Northwestern? Are things looking up? I mean, how do you see where Katie Gerald's program is right now, and how do you see it moving ahead?
Well, I mean, when you win two out of your last three after you'd lost seven in a row, yes, things
Yeah, okay.
are looking up. And their whole goal right now, so they, I mean, they've had to readjust their expectations this year. Everybody's kind of had to readjust to what they thought could happen this year. You know, maybe another incremental step moving up in the standings, maybe get in the NCAA tournament outside the play-in game. You know, none of that's really going to happen. So you have to readjust. And right now, the goal for them is just not to be playing on the first day. And tournament. And they have an opportunity with some home games against teams in their weight class.
Yeah.
And they got two road games against teams again in their weight class. So the opportunity there to move out of that first day is clearly ahead of them. They played really well at home. I wouldn't expect that to change. Just a matter if they have enough firepower to get it done. But when you look ahead on how their recruiting is going, who they've signed, who they've got commitments from, who they're looking at. Talent, more talent is coming. And I keep telling people, the best player on the team right now isn't even playing, Amaya Reynolds. I mean, she's a top 40, top 50 player coming out of high school. She had foot surgery at the end of her senior year. They've redshirted her this year for. Because they wanted the full 4 years out of her. She's getting some reps with the scout team. She's getting some reps with the starters. She's a dynamic player. She's an aggressive, elite type of athlete. And excuse my French, she's a badass on the court. She doesn't take crap from anybody. She gives it. She's one of those players that has a swagger to her. And she will really elevate the talent on this team. And then when you start adding the recruits they have coming in, and then the commitments and what they potentially could do in the portal this year. They're going to have to get in the portal. They're going to have to get a wing and potentially a post player to really push them forward. I think that's going to be the main thing to watch in the offseason for them is what can they get done in the portal? Because they do need some help. They need some scoring help. But the talent is coming, and no one likes to be patient, but this program was not in a great shape when she took over, and all the circumstances involved in her and Katie becoming the head coach. And it's been a long climb back. You know, I think they're going to get there, but they're still probably a year or two before they get to the level that maybe fans have been accustomed to and where they want to be. But better days ahead for them. But, you know, this year it's just about getting out of that first day of the Big Ten tournament. And they're going to have to win some home games here and to get that done.
Tom, February might be the only month that you can kind of exhale in the wonderful world of football coverage. I don't know if that's fair. It's easy for me to say you're doing the job. I'm not. So, but spring game has been set for April 13th. Spring ball is going to start. And after spring break, any other, what other updates, what do you kind of, as you start to look ahead to spring ball, you got a lot of new players. What will be some of those top storylines that you're going to be following?
First of all, you two guys are badasses.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike helps me out with football, and I tell you what, I guess things have slowed a little bit. It's a recruiting dead period right now. I think it opens back up March 4th, so nothing on campus or off campus at all. And you're right, Alan. I guess first up is March 7th is going to be Purdue's Pro Day.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of drama around it this year, given the dearth of real legitimate prospects, Tyrone Tracy really being the only one with a real likelihood of getting drafted. But I included a roster of the guys who are going to work out in boiling over on Thursday, so fans can check that out. And so we'll see. The combine's coming up too. Tracy will be at the combine. And I'll try to stay in touch with Tyrone. And then, like you said, Alan, March 19th is the beginning of spring football. They're going on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. The Tuesday, Thursday practices are early, and the Friday ones are later. They wanted the players to have the weekends off, I was told. There'll be no media access on Fridays, just on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And no, fans aren't allowed to attend. I know much of their chagrin, and I wish that was the case too. And media is only going to be able to watch the early periods as well. So that's sort of been the MO so far under Walters, is just to watch the first four, five, six periods, which is basically nothing. Guys stretching and doing some individual drills. Then we'll come back later for the interviews. But again, a lot of questions and storylines we can talk about at a later date. And been talking to the portal transfers, 14 guys, and be a chance to, I guess, to see what those guys look like in the full pads. So, you know, Mike's covered a lot of spring footballs. You know, you never want to get too excited about spring football. A lot of guys will be limited, won't participate at all. I learned George Byrne, the tight end, is going to probably miss all the spring ball with a broken foot. I'm sure Gus Hartwig will be limited. You know, other guys coming off injuries will be limited. So, long story short, don't read too much into it, but it's still a kind of a fun way to whet our appetite, give us a little sneak peek on maybe what's lying ahead for Purdue as they move into that 18-team Big Ten conference. So ought to be a lot of fun. And yeah, before I sign off, I want to swing it back to Alan, swing back to hoops real quick, Alan. Maybe you can make
yeah,
this your
go ahead. Fire away.
Given your length and Purdue knowledge, why don't you give me right now, as of this date, your top three Boilermakers of all time?
You know, I can't imagine that Zach Edey, it's hard to put it in context, but I think Glenn Robinson, Zach Edey, I know John Wooden was good, but I it was a little bit before my time, but I'll throw Rick Mount, Zach Edey and Glenn Robinson together and mix them all up. You can't minimize that.
What's the one again? No, you give me the 1, 2, 3.
You ask your hard questions.
You don't have to. I don't want you to make anybody mad.
If you're a two-time National Player of the Year, I don't know how you're not number one. And I know, you know, I know Glenn Robinson was Glenn Robinson. Rick Mount was with Rick Mount. But this guy has really been special. And,
all are different for sure, you know.
No doubt. During all different players, all extremely talented. But
fans love those debates. That could be our LeBron versus Michael debate and on this website.
Yeah, and we'll get there. Carmi, I was going to say, I don't know. I mean, I think that's – can you minimize – I'm not minimizing Zach's accomplishments here, but in the grand scheme, it's hard to beat that.
It is, and it's all based, in my opinion, on where he started when he got here.
Yeah.
Where he's been. Everybody else you've mentioned came to Purdue, highly ranked, you know, top of the class, talent was there. I mean, Rick Mount's on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a high school guy. Glenn Robinson was Glenn Robinson. I mean, a lot of hype for him, but you had zero, and I mean zero hype for Zach Edey, other than he was tall and he was visiting Purdue and he reclassified. I mean, we all know the story. I mean, Painter wanted to redshirt him initially until they saw him on the practice floor and thought, no, we got to play this guy. But even going back to his freshman year, he played 20 minutes. He split time with Trevion Williams. He's picking up offensive fouls because he can't control his elbows. And, you know, it took him a little bit of time to settle in. And once he did, he's taken off. I mean, you know, they're different eras. And everybody's going to have their opinion on who they think, you know, should the ball be, you know, for a number one all-time player, should the ball be in his hands more, like a guard, like a Rick Pounder or something? You know, someone has to pass the ball to Zach Edey. Not bringing up the floor, at least bringing the ball up the floor, at least not yet. Maybe that's first. But it's just hard to wrap your head around what he's done in the time he's done it and where he started and where he's at now. It's a remarkable story. It's got to be one of the better college basketball stories of the last decade or two, in my opinion, for a high-profile program like Purdue. But he's been tremendous. But, you know, it doesn't minimize those other guys and what they did at Purdue and the accomplishments that they had. You know, he's going to, you know, got a shot to break the all-time record for points. He's going to get the all-time rebound record here shortly.
Yeah.
But he's going to do it like those other guys in the old days did it. You know, he did it with two-pointers. He has one three-pointer in his career. So he's done it in a similar fashion to some of these other guys. But, you know, just it's a different age, a different, you know, attention and social media and all that has kind of magnified even more.
Yeah, no doubt. And three more appearances in Mackey Arena for Zach Edey. If you're a Purdue fan, you best enjoy it because it has been an unbelievable ride to watch him play. All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your expertise. It was stunning as usual, and that part we always know. But we'll be back shortly with the next segment and our special guest, a guy we all know, Orlando Whiten, is going to come and talk about, you know, not only closing his restaurant, but his memorabilia sale on Saturday as well. So we'll have some fun with that. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. If I can hit stop. Segment two, Golden Black Live, and we really are in the thick of things here at the Big O Sports Room. Bruno's, as everyone knows, in the Lafayette area, is closing, and that's a bittersweet time for the Eitan family. But the Big O Sports Sale tomorrow. I mean, that's what time is it tomorrow?
We're going to go 10 to 4 here at Bruno's,
and we are amidst all the items, and we're in the I guess you call this room the
Big O Sports Room,
but the whole area, and you've got how many sports pieces? Room. How many pieces are going to be?
I would say there's probably at least probably 1,000 items. Not my complete collection. Everybody thinks we're getting rid of everything, but I still have some items. Have some possibilities down the road in the future. I'm not going to give out too many information, but when I do, I can get a hold of Alan and let him know what's going on.
Yeah, we're the conduit to everything information.
We've always got something going on in the future. So
the next
step, I think.
Yeah, and I think that was a question that a lot of folks have had is, you know, is this is obviously the closing of the restaurant on Brown Street due to a project that's going on at a hotel and apartment complex coming in and other things. But this isn't necessarily the end. I know you guys aren't ready to talk about exactly what's next for Bruno.
Exactly.
But are you safe to say that something is next?
Yeah, I think there's always something going to something always pop up. We know we always got our ears open to see what's going to happen. And, you know, the sports memorabilia with me is, you know, with Purdue and everything, I've got a lot of extra things. So I wanted to make some of the availability to some of the people have been here a long time and they've seen a lot of the items. So some of the things will be available to put them in their own collection and keep them going on. Cause I'm getting a little older now. So I got to get rid of a few things. I don't know if all my nieces are going to want to try to get rid of all this someday, but it's going to make it a little easier on them. Plus I can share with some of my items I've collected for the last, 50 years, 50, 60 years since I've been collecting and give everybody out a chance to enjoy as much as I've enjoyed it. And I've had some ex-players reach out. I've given some stuff back to the players and some of the people who worked for me have been on the walls that played here and played volleyball here. And I've had their parents come and get the pictures off the wall. And it's been kind of fun doing that. And I've had some phone calls from other players. I also had some phone calls from some ex-players want to know if they needed some help to keep it going. I said, well, right now, right now the future is going to be bright. We'll have something going and something might happen, but timing is right for the family. It's going to be a great project down here. I know some people are kind of against some of the development, but it's going to be like a two 7-story building is going to make the levee is going to really improve here. And we're going to have a lot more people come in this area. You're going to have some retail and have some apartments, a little bit of mixed use. And I think it'll be a great complex.
Well, it's interesting because you in 1999 had to make a move across the way. And it was 99, right?
And that was a forced move. That was a state game. The state came and did that in a domain. So this is kind of, we've been working about 3 years, the project on this right now. And now I want to let everybody know, we negotiated with them for 3 years. It's bittersweet, very bittersweet. That's what we've said that word. My brother and I have said that word so many times in the last week and a half. It's only been over a week since our last day. And it seemed like it's been like a month already, but we've been getting some stuff ready here and, and we noticed, we've been keeping some of the equipment. So when people come by, if they see us taking a lot of equipment out, that's a good sign. That means, must be something going on with that. So
we'll see
what happens.
There isn't any question or something. And you're right. It is the Eiton family Orlando, who's was sitting next to me, and brother Bruno and sister Tina. It has been a family tradition dating back to your dad, 1955.
Yeah, 55.
I remember the days of Blessed Sacrament and all the things that our church the Great Supper that your dad brought together. It's a phenomenal tradition. And were you surprised by the outpouring in the last week? I mean, it became a social media thing, and then all of a sudden everybody started saying
it was overwhelming with the support from the community. And it's been that way for all these years. That's what we've been, we built our business, was built on all the families and all the community. And so that way we stayed in business with all the people in the area to come out and support us. And the last two nights, I want to put a little quick plug in. One of my good friend of mine, Brad Cohen, was here both nights. The last two nights he was here both nights. So.
Yeah.
And then my dad and Arnie were the best of friends. My dad greeted Arnie when he first opened up, about 10-year difference. We were 10 years ahead of them. And the families have been really close. And I think people don't realize that you could be in business and still be friends, be competitors or still be friends. And we put that little West Lafayette Red Devil push in there since Allen's.
And there's no greater, in my view, because Brad wrote such a nice note, I think, on Facebook about that we post on our site, but no greater really talking about the great community that we have here. And you guys are the two shining examples, because that's really what this place has been all about. It's been the community. And this has been a place that people have come to before Purdue basketball games, but also Christmas Eve is the biggest thing here. It has been a phenomenal tradition for a very, very
long. Had so many generations of people, they got married here and they're like grandkids and grandparents of the generation. So we're already third generation with the family and the nieces and everybody. So it's a big family affair. And it's like, I always look at everybody's family. So we keep track of everybody, how we get employees to call us back and a good, a good outreach and an outpouring of support from some ex-employees. And, a lot of, we've heard a lot from, people who went to school here, call me back or come to visit. But the sad part is a lot of the ones come back to town, they don't know we're closed up. So it's kind of sad when they come to the door. And we had people, we were here last night doing some things and, there's ladders everywhere and things are, and people walk in the door one day, they go, can I get a table for two? And I go, have you looked around a little bit? And ladders are everywhere and the ovens are kind of missing. It's been overwhelming support.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. This place
if you're listening this before Saturday or watching this 10 to 4 on Saturday for the sale, it is a virtual museum of Purdue. It's not all Purdue stuff, but very vast majority. But I could sit here for about another 5 hours. Some of our Golden Black covers are here, game programs to signed helmets. How many helmets are there?
I think there's probably at least 100 mini helmets, probably 150 jerseys of former Purdue players that are professional jerseys or Purdue jerseys, programs, autographs. We just have some of the
posters,
cheerleader pictures and things that are on the walls. A lot of things are signed to Bruno's, a lot of things signed to Big O. So a lot of times I had the same item signed to both of us. So I've got some extras. So, you know, I'm not getting rid of all my stuff. So it's like, you know, it's not like a fire sale or anything, but it's going to be something where I can share some of the memorabilia with other people. And they can, you know, I know everybody's got a little man cave or something they want to put up. And so we've got a little bit of everything.
You got a lot of everything.
And depending on the crowd, we're going to have, you know, 25 people at a time to come in, so everybody can kind of be able to see everything, and then we'll kind of let people come and go, and we'll kind of control the crowd as long as the snow stays away too bad. Yeah, see everybody get here. So,
well, your story has been about the relationships you've built. I mean, yes, the high profile guys, the Drew Breeses of the world, your close friend, and has always been supportive of this. The Mike Allstotts, the Roosevelt Colvins, the Bob Greasies. We've been in here with all these guys over the years, the Mark Hermans, the Bart Burles, on down the line. Talk about that. I mean, just the life you've had in this. You're obviously been a big sports guy your entire life, but the ability to, you've collected stuff, but it's all been about building relationships with all these people.
I think the relationship to be able to know these guys and talk to them and keep in touch with them. I've had, and there one that Al didn't mention, I had Dustin Keller reached out and talked to Dustin a lot. And he'd be local, on Lafayette Jeff and being here, a really good friend.
And an NFL first rounder, by the way. But
I had a jersey for Bart Burrell. We got that mailed out to Bart. I think we're gonna send it to Florida, or his daughter's gonna take that. And I've had some other players reach out for some of, and Matt Light's daughter was in, she goes to Purdue, and I had a picture of myself and Matt making pizza, and she goes, "Can I get a copy of that picture?" So she came down the other day, and I dug that picture out, and that's kind of fun. Now you get all these kids that are going to school; their parents are athletes here. You know, it's amazing. You know, Konza Martin's son, you know, here, and you get everybody coming in to visit. Now they got their kids going to school. It's really, really cool to see that. And I always had a story with a lot of the ex players. I said, if you guys don't come back to visit, I'm going to take your picture off the wall. So I put somebody else up. So that was kind of my little dig into them. So,
well, I think you provided your fair share of pizzas to these guys over the years, and have been very, very gracious. Even with Golden Black, he has been a sponsor of ours and a supporter of so many things that we've been about doing back to even before I was with Golden Black. It's been extremely important to our success, and part of the, you know, like I said, it is the ultimate family business, but it really involves the Purdue family and then some. All right, we got to ask you a little basketball question, because obviously the Boilermakers had a challenging one last night. Got the job done.
They got over the hump.
And I know you want to do. You and Tom Schott, of course, longtime Purdue administrator, and still working over and working athletics and worked at the university now. But talking about the fact that you still love these memorabilia shows, Chris Pate, another guy that collects. It's important this stuff stays around. I mean, that's the thing. It's the history of Purdue sports, men and women, that you're telling by all these items.
Yeah, we're trying to keep the history alive. And what also, you mentioned Chris Pate, and there's a couple of other younger collectors I've kind of passed on. I guess I kind of passed the torch down. I started getting some of my
items. You're too young for that.
items to them, because their collections are going to keep getting bigger. So
yeah,
I think they're doing some things going on at Purdue that are going to be some displays possibly in the future. I think there's something going on. I don't know exactly, but I don't know if I can. I can't say too much about that, but there are going to be some displays going on. I know I am working on a thing with the West Lafayette Library for my collection of West Lafayette athletes. Matter of fact, we're in the process of highlighting some exhibit at the library. I think my Bob Friend collection, I have a lot of stuff from Bob Friend. A lot of people don't realize that he went to West Lafayette. You know, I've got George Karloffis, and then we'll go over to the Harrison group. We'll have Eric Bruntlett, Josh Dunn, Josh Lindblom, and we're going to have probably going to have Todd Dunwoody involved with that, and maybe Eric Sable and Josh Loggins. So we're going to have to keep some of that memorabilia going. So I can't have it all at my house, and since I don't have a restaurant to display it anymore, I got to kind of branch it out. And I think eventually the Caretaker's Cottage is looking for some memorabilia, and I think we can highlight some stuff in there, and maybe some of my astronaut items, and you know, some other things, maybe Johnny Wood and a few things there. So we're going to kind of get a little piece of that a little bit, and have a almost like a traveling road show, but we'll have a museum. Have a museum where people. I don't want stuck in a basement somewhere or a closet. And I want to be availability where people can go look at it and see the history and preserve the history. And we try to do more of that over at Purdue right now. We can get some of that done with some of the Purdue stuff, and you know, show the history of everything.
You know, I always try to take credit, which I do not deserve. But you and I went to a baseball game, my first Cubs game, 1969. We're the Babe Ruth state champions, and I'm busy trying to get Ernie Banks' autograph. Hank Aaron hits the ball, hits to your seat. You grab the ball, get it signed. I think Ernie Banks. I'm probably embellished the heck out of the story, and I know it didn't start your collection. But where did you? I mean, is this something that they get going?
Somebody asked me at a TV interview this week. They asked me, "How did you start collecting?" Well, I started collecting baseball cards a year when I was a kid, like on the West Side. I'd go up to Hooks, you know.
And yeah.
I'd go get a box of cards, and then. My first real encounter was going to Purdue games over at Ross Aid. It was probably Leroy Keyes' freshman or sophomore year. I chased him down after the game and got his chin strap.
Yeah, that was a big deal back then.
Everybody's still doing it. You know, I'm going to be my late 60s now. I'm still chasing players. So it's kind of almost embarrassing sometimes to go to a ball game and try to get something from somebody. But that's kind of fun doing that. It keeps the kid in me alive, so.
Yeah, you've had some great names, Glenn Robinson, Leroy Keyes, of course, legends, Rick Mount. You did a memorabilia show with Rick when Tom shot here a couple weeks ago, and that was good to see Rick back in the fold too, because it is important to Purdue people.
Yes.
And you are the history of this program. We're living history maybe this year with this basketball team, but this is the great tradition of this program, football, basketball. And it's not just football and basketball. You've got Purdue's great volleyball tradition here.
We had a couple of volleyball girls out there at the show. So, and the show's put on.
Yeah, with, Chloe Chacoin's a good prize.
She had a big crowd. And we had Dylan Thienem in there. And we also added on we kind of did a little different. We got Bruce Barker from the Piano Man's, a good friend of mine. And we had people mail in cactus cups to get signed. I thought that was awesome. So, it's kind of a Tom Schott, myself, and Eddie Keister. We formed a group. It's called Rail Splitters Authentics. And we have a website with some Purdue pictures and autographs. And so we get a lot of things. So now we're working on our next show in August. At the fairgrounds.
And so that's going to continue with you and Tom doing those are terrific. And Eddie, we're going to give him a shout out because he's been the key grip today getting us set up. But it is going to be a busy day tomorrow.
Yeah.
And a bit. And again, use that word bittersweet again. But it will be. I'm going to guess you're going to literally blow the doors off.
I think I think some people are going to enjoy coming and see. There's a lot of stuff here that there's some other stuff that wasn't on the walls I brought in. You know, the extra stuff I had at home, some programs and things. There's a lot of stuff I can't display because in the last couple of years, I haven't been able, there wasn't any wall space left. And like my dad always told me the one room I couldn't put any Swiss room was just for Swiss items. So I was always honored that couldn't put, you know, sports stuff in that in there. So, or I couldn't put them on the ceiling, but I got a lot of things that I think everybody will enjoy just to come and see it and just reminisce. I think even if you don't even buy anything, just come by and say hello, you know, and I can thank you for being a customer. And as much as you guys enjoy coming, I want to tell them I enjoy you guys being here. So
no doubt. All right, last question. Do you have a favorite item of all time? Is there one that you just say, this is my prized collection?
Well, I guess somebody asked me that question this week too, and I have to think about, I got a football that Drew sent me when he had to pass the record of most yardage. He got one of the game balls for me and signed it, and a bunch of the guys were down at the game. Chris Clapton and Kelly Kitchell, the whole group was down there and called me. So they got something coming for you, and they sent me a program signed to Big O, and the ball was signed to Big O, and it was when Drew had set the record for the NFL record for passing yardage, and that's one of my prize items. That's something I always keep, and then I have a few Johnny Wooden stories. We had when Alan was involved with the Johnny Wooden with the reunion, with Golden Black, and we still got a bunch of that, and it's too bad we didn't have cameras, cell phones back then. So we couldn't get any camera pictures. We had a party up the upstairs, old Bruno's, and Johnny Wooden held court and everybody just sat there and listened to him. It was like unbelievable being in his presense. You know, it's a chance of a lifetime. We also had with Neil Armstrong and Gene Cernan.
Right.
One of the best. Were here after NFF dinner. Yeah. That was probably one of my highlights of having here, those guys here. And that, and then got to be good friends with Gene Cernan for over the years. And he came back here about 3 or 4 different times and talked about being on the moon and how he wrecked the moon rover. And, yeah. He damaged the fender. And I thought that was hilarious. So.
Yeah, there is a story behind every piece.
Maybe we could have to do a new book. Maybe
I think we might have to do a new book. Well, and I like the fact Rick Mount is over our shoulder. He's going to be on our show next week, and we'll talk about Big O, I'm sure, while we sit at Stookie's in Thorntown.
Yeah, we had laughed a lot when Rick was out the show. It was kind of fun to reminisce with him.
Yeah, and Glenn Robinson also over our shoulder as well. So make sure if you get the chance, and if you missed it, stay in touch, because there's more of this to come from Big O, from Bruno's on down the line. But we appreciate
it. I appreciate everybody. Thank you very much, the community, everybody. Thank you.
Speaking from my compadres and my colleagues at Golden Black and all the people who have been involved with it all these years, we're grateful to you, things you've done. So, all right, we're going to
boiler up.
Yeah, and boiler up for Purdue is, and we're going to have our third segment today. Tim Spiker, I think a guy that when he was here for a couple years, a leadership guru, and I'm sure you got to know him a little bit as a walk-on. His dad was a trainer at Purdue. He will join. Tim joins us for segment three. Tim's been a friend of the show. Had him on last year. I call you a leadership guru. I don't know if that's a fair thing, but it really is an interesting book that I've enjoyed that I think I can show here. Leaders Worth Following. Tim Spiker wrote it in 2020. Really a manual of talking about leadership and all the things you bring. But give us the elevator speech of what you we know you spent 2 years. It was 2 years at Purdue as a walk-on. And then transferred, but played with Matt Painter. And had the opportunity to go into this field. Give us a little bit of background for our viewers on that.
Yeah, probably about 7 or 8 years after college, this just passion for the issue of leadership kicked on in me. And I just started researching and doing everything I could do to learn as much about the topic. And thankfully, I had been around some pretty great leaders. And, you know, sometimes you realize things in the moment, but oftentimes it's only in hindsight. You're like, oh, wow. That was really exceptional. And I've had the chance to kind of look back on my life and see so many great leaders. And of course, Gene Cady falls into that list really, really profoundly. So I've just moved forward in working with organizations around the topic of leadership. It's never far from my mind and my heart. And so that's what I spend my time on when I'm not trying to catch Purdue basketball. And also trying to hang in there with 4 kids of my own. So that's what I'm up to.
Yeah, and that is a full plate. And then some. You matriculated to West Lafayette from Morgantown, West Virginia, correct?
I actually had a stop at Brewster Academy. So I actually played against Zoe at New Hampton Prep. We were both up there. Now Brewster was competitive then. You know, it's at a different level now. But I probably couldn't make the team at Brewster now. But yeah, no, I spent a prep year before coming over to Purdue.
And your dad obviously was also involved in the staff here as well, and a big part of what Purdue basketball and Purdue athletics is all about. All right, leadership. We talked about Gene Cady was back last weekend for the Indiana game. Let's talk about all those leadership lessons that were brought to you that came to the fore that are still resonating with you all these years later from what Gene brought.
There are so many things that pop up. It's amazing, really. And you just don't realize it's happening at the time. One of the things is like, how do you have an even keel as a leader? Which isn't to say that you aren't passionate. Nobody would ever accuse Gene Cady of not being passionate. Yeah. But one of the things that coach would say to us is you're never as good or as bad as you think you are. And I remember a few years ago, I had a big business deal that unexpectedly fell through. And we were counting on it. We had planned a lot for it. And I remember sitting in my car in the parking lot at the age of 48.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing Gene Cady in my head. I'm hearing Gene Cady say, you're never as good or as bad as you think you are. In this case, you're not as bad as you think you are.
Yeah.
This didn't work out. But if you were to go back and look at the game tape, you know, theoretically, of how this deal went down and didn't happen, you would probably find you're not, you didn't screw it up quite as badly as you thought. You didn't get the opportunity, but maybe there were some other circumstances. And it goes the other way as well. You get a great opportunity with a client in my space. You start and like, well, there may be some circumstances that helped you out. So little things like you're never as good or as bad as you think you are. And then I would add into that, you know, we had an emphasis of the day every day in practice.
Yes.
And once in a while, it was about basketball.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it was about life. And so when you look at a person like Coach Katie and you see what he's up to as a leader, you know, the equivalent in the business world is you're only interested in the P&L. You're only interested in the profit loss. You're not interested in the people. In the sports world, you're only interested in wins and losses. You're not really interested in your players as people. And Gene Katie was the opposite of that, which is why we all wanted to run through a wall for the guy, because we knew that he cared about us more than just as basketball players. So those are a couple of things that come to mind when I think about Coach Katie.
Well, I love that whole idea, the emphasis of the day. And I was a student manager long before you played, and we'd get the chalkboard out and he'd write it down. And you did kind of wonder, because Gene was always, you know, he was a football guy, but a rough and tumble guy. And it was all about intensity. But to bring that to the table, I think, was always very, very telling about the kind of guy he was and what it meant to him to be around young people and to try to lead them. All right, Matt Painter has got is cut out of the same cloth in a lot of ways, different personality, certainly.
Sure.
But there is no personality quite like Gene Katie, I don't think. But they broke the mold.
True.
But Matt has had leadership challenges throughout his time, extremely successful tenure in West Lafayette. An interesting one this year, because obviously the last 3 years, tournament hasn't always gone the way that Matt and company would like to have it go. As you watched this team now, 23-2 after a harrowing win last night against Minnesota. But just talk about what you observe from what you see from Matt Painter and how he has dealt with it this season and moving his team forward.
Well, you see a few different things. I think the biggest thing is the culture of the program. We can talk about X and O things to do with this team versus that team. But when you look at talented athletes who are bought in to the idea of not only the team, but Purdue, you know, there is something very special going on when you can find people who know how to play, are coachable, and are more committed to the group than to themselves, especially in this day and age. I mean, thank goodness there wasn't social media when I was in college. Like, goodness gracious. Like, I can't even imagine how that would have been. But this world invites high-level athletes to be all about themselves. And if you just look back through this program and how it has evolved under Matt's leadership, I don't think you end up with a culture like this by accident. One of the things we talk with our clients about as a leadership responsibility is driving culture. That's not something that happens. You know, you don't just hope for it. You plan for it. You work on it. And I just think there are so many things to be excited about. But ultimately, I think one of the main ones is the culture that Matt and the staff, Brandon, Elliot, others. I know I'm not naming everybody here, but some of the folks I get a chance to interact with come to mind or did interact with many years ago. I just think there's a very, very special program development reality going on at Purdue that is very rare.
You know, one of the things that's been interesting about Matt Painter, of course, one of the top coaches in college basketball, and his ability to delegate. There's been much written about PJ Thompson running the offense and getting in the huddle at a key point of the game and Matt listening to him. There was a viral video on that to Sasha Stefanovic handling out of bounds plays. But the ability for a leader to give up some of the reins and let others do it, that's a big part of what this is all about.
Yeah. I mean, you have to not let your ego get in the way. And you have to also be, see, Matt's job is not only to be for players, but to be for his assistant coaches. And so creating opportunities now he's doing this thing that is pretty new here in college basketball, this level of specialization. That is a new thing. And here's the thing that would be really, really hard as a leader. And that is, how do you let go of things that you're really good at? Because I'm here to tell you right now, you know, 28 years ago, it was very obvious that Matt Painter knew X's and O's. I mean, I oftentimes will share a story where I won't get into all the details, but let's just say there was a game at a critical point where Matt Painter interrupted Gene Cady in the huddle to tell him that we needed to run a different play. And we ran a different play because of that. Now, that can't happen every day. There's a hierarchy and there's some, you know, but it did happen the one time. And so when I'm telling you, Matt Painter is as good an X and O person as there is in the country. And I know that some people want to point to some of those tournament losses and question that. But if you look at the long arc, you're going to be hard pressed. And so when he's delegating things to Sasha or PJ, like he's delegating things, he's not a dummy in those things.
Yeah.
But he is. So it requires some level of humility and some desire, I think, to develop your staff. And then you, as a leader, you get to say, oh, wait, if I'm not doing that every day, what does this allow me to focus on as well? So there's a really interesting dynamic that goes on there. But if I were as talented in X and O's as Matt Painter is, I would have a hard time letting go of some of those things. So now, of course, PJ and others, they're pretty aware of that too. So like, okay, I better step up. I better really know my stuff if this guy who knows so much is entrusting it to me.
Yeah, Matt, you know, talked about it on Thursday's press conference, but he used the exact same phrase that I had to check my ego at the door a little bit and realize that. But I think,
you know, I didn't see it. Dynamic. So that's not a plant. I did not see that press conference. So.
No, you're right. But it was really so much of that I think it's interesting. His humility seems to really come out at important times. And you have to think that his teammates or his players get that in spades. All right, one other leadership question I have in a specific, and I'll let you interject. Zach Edey, interesting character, because we talked with Chad Q Brown last week about his personality profile, very steady, very even. You see that on the basketball court. But when you look at a guy that you don't typically have leaders at 7'4", in basketball, it's usually that point guard or whatever that is. But talk about what you see from Zach and how he handles himself and how he leads this basketball team, because I think he really does.
Well, I think about the word, you know, John Maxwell, great leadership author, he sums all of leadership up into one word. He calls it influence. And ultimately, when you have a player as talented and successful as Zach Edey, whether Zach wants to be an influence or not, he's going to be. You know, way, way back in, you know, our version of that back in the day for us was Woody Austin. Woody Austin couldn't help but be an influence because he was so talented and such a key part of what's going on. The reality, so Zach's going to have influence whether he wants it or not. Now add in his steady demeanor. And that is something that is stabilizing. And again, I think you see this. When I say steady, I'm not talking about dispassionate. There's plenty of passion, but you don't let, you know, you don't do the whole amygdala hijack thing where you let your brain go haywire and you're not in charge of it anymore. You have passion, but you are measured. And I think that's stabilizing for everybody around any endeavor, be it athletic or otherwise. So it's really admirable. And on top of that, I mean, just listen to Zach talk about his teammates and the team and the program. I mean, for Pete's sake, barring some catastrophe, he's going to be a two-time National Player of the Year. And you don't hear Zach Edey walking around just talking about how great he is all the time, and yet he is. So when your top player is behaving that way and influencing that way, again, back to the culture thing, that's what an incredible asset.
Yeah. Tongue-in-cheek here, but he also, as his leadership skills he'll lead by example and work on those free throws because he's been so good. And he's going through a patch. Maybe Tim Spiker could come and give him some lessons of the 16 steps of shooting. But no, Zach is really a very good free throw shooter.
He's just going through a rough patch.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how. But you know one thing about him, and there is, I guess I want to ask you about the correlation between hard work and leadership. There is something to it. He leads also by the fact that you know darn well he and Trey Kaufman Wren will be spending extra time shooting free throws until they can't shoot anymore. That's been the MO.
Well, I mean, if you just think about any job that any of us have had, if we look at the leader who's coming in late and leaving early and taking extra vacation, and then they show up with some kind of rah-rah speech someday, we're all going to go like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
like, I'm listening to you. You're using your position for perks. You're not leveraging this to make this all better for all of us. And so, of course, when it comes to hard work, and, you know, at Purdue, all you got to do is look at the back of the practice shorts. Like, this is not, it's not confusing what we're about when it comes to that. You know, it's painted on, you know, over top where we run out onto the court. It's a requirement. And it's absolutely true that if a leader's not going to, they can't just talk about it. They have to also show up and be an example. And no doubt that is critically important.
All right. You came as a walk-on. One other person I want to talk with is football related. And it also is an unbelievable situation. Aiden O'Connell goes from walk-on, bided his time as a seventh string quarterback and tight end in practice to now being, I think he's going to have he's going to have an NFL career. He's shown that whether he's going to be a starter for the next 5-10 years, who knows, but he has shown that. Just talk about that mindset of a guy that like you wanted to get on the court. Aiden O'Connell wanted to play and probably had to listen to people say it's never going to work for you. But that mentality of, you know, that stick-to-itiveness and that thing in your fiber that gets that done.
Well, for me, I think it was a journey of faith of sorts. You know, I believed that God had a path for me. Now, I didn't know that it was going to. I remember a very late night, long negotiation. God, if you can just make this, if I can just make this team, I've got all this plans for you. Of course, he's laughing at me. Like, he's like, I don't, it's all right, Tim.
Man plans, God laughs, right?
That's right. That's right. But it really was just taking a step in faith. You know, for me, it was, are you going to go play Division III or do you want to try to give this a shot with no guarantees? But, you know, as it turned out, it really was probably kind of a development of my own character in a sense to just show up the next day, keep believing, show up the next day, keep believing. And, you know, I remember the day that I realized that it actually made the team. And I was talking with my mom, many other people around the program, our managers and such, says, hey, I came from Brewster, so I did have an opportunity. I came during the summer, we played pickup. So they got a sense for whether or not this was even possible. And then when I came back in the fall, I was with the team the whole time the whole kind of the one day walk on tryout, that wasn't my story. And frankly, if it had been, I probably wouldn't have made the team because my game doesn't stand out in that way.
Yeah.
But we go through the fall, things are going well, and we're starting practice. And I think it was my mom asked me, or you know, actually a couple different people, and I was like, when are you going to say I've made the team? And I said to myself, I will say I've made the team when my name's on a locker. So we're coming up, we're week into practice. I didn't have practice gear. The day before practice, I was like, coach, like, do you want me to, what do you want me to do for practice gear? I just didn't want to make any assumptions, right? I wasn't, and he said, go down to the cage and Mark Clark took care of me. It was about a week later, I came in, I sat my books down. I had been getting dressed at an empty locker, just didn't have a name on it at all.
Yeah.
And I was just taking off my shoes and I look up, and it said Tim Spiker, number 4. And I was like, and nobody else was in the locker room. And I was like, I mean, I almost start crying thinking about it now. I mean, it was a really, really special moment that I felt so blessed to be a part of.
Yeah, no doubt. And the story, the rest is history, so to speak. Number 4, let's see, there's been Kyle Macy. There's been Rob Hummel. There's been Tim Spiker.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure Tim Spiker comes to mind for many people.
We like to throw trivia into all this stuff, but the great Rob Hummel is
enjoying the great Robbie Hummel is phenomenal. Absolutely.
And like you, he's also about as good a person as you're going to find. And that in the grand scheme is kind of what this is all about, is having good people around you. And we're privileged to spend a little bit of time with you. Okay, the book, and he's not selling his book, but I just liked his book so much. The only leaders worth following, by Tim Spiker, written in 2020. And we'll get you a link. Tim, send me a link and we'll get it on our message boards as well, where people can pick it up. And Tim is not guaranteeing a national championship for the Boilermakers, but I think that would be that would make your April 8th pretty special. It certainly would.
I mean, we've all jumped at that. Anybody who has a connection, certainly you don't have to be on the team to care about that. The whole community is leaning in, and you know, to me, when I watch what's going on with this team, this, frankly, when you compare what did happen, not only against FDU, but in the last portion of the season, you see changes. You see things are different. And Matt said it after the season last year, you know, I'd be stupid not to reconsider some things. And this is something else about Matt that I want to point out that's pretty rare in this day and age, but somebody who's willing to take responsibility. If we go back, I want to say 8 or 9 years ago, when we had some really rough times and we were at the bottom of the Big Ten, and Matt didn't, I mean, it's just rare that people want to say, hey, it's my responsibility, and really mean it. I know people like do that kind of as a fake thing. But Matt said, look, we've got guys that don't know how to play hard, and it's up to me to make sure they learn how to do that. And if they can't learn that, then it's up to me to get the right guys in the program. So no matter how you want to do the math, it's on me. And you just don't, I mean, you got to think about what Matt has at stake to say that publicly. Maybe he's just saying the thing that's obvious, but many people don't say that. They don't take that responsibility. Yeah. Thankfully, Purdue is a place that wasn't moving as quickly, too quickly, I would say, as most athletic programs do. And now, as he made a shift through that experience, he made changes. Now we have the program that we have today that is doing amazing things. So I just love watching, noticing some of the changes. You see, I saw somebody posted on, I guess I'm supposed to say X now, I was going to say Twitter, but somebody posted like the difference between at this point this season and that and last season is joy. And you see that. I don't know if we can credit that, particularly to Lance, perhaps. He's a lot of fun.
I think a lot of it.
Yeah, but there is, you know, nobody learned how to shoot a three this year. So if you want to go down the line and kind of whether it's Lance or Fletcher, Mason Gillis obviously is just lethal at this point. And it's not like Braden Smith's not going to hit one either. They're better, yes, but the bigger part is not that somebody shot a bunch. I'm glad they shoot their thousands of threes during the summer, absolutely. But there is a different kind of freedom that's going on right now that is different than last year. And if the ball doesn't go through Zach at times, we're still playing basketball. And I think that is the biggest difference between last year and this year. So it's just I know I'm totally biased, but I think I think it's such an easy team to cheer for when you look at the whole of what's going on.
No doubt. And they're doing that in spades in Mackey Arena every time. Only three more home games. Yeah. And it will be a bittersweet day. You got one more point. Go ahead. Fire away.
I got to say something about the IU game. So I have a buddy of mine, Steve Swain. He works for the Big Ten Network, and he and I are conversing a lot. He knows a lot about basketball. And one of the things that he shared with me that I wouldn't have been able to say it on my own, but he said it and that was it. But he just talked about, I never wanted that game to end. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly how I felt. We were in such control. There was I'll have to confess here. Maybe it's because I'm the guy that only got in when we were up by a bunch, but I wanted to win by 30. Like we're up by 28. Yeah. Like I would have, you know, and then Gunn hits a couple threes and dials it back a little bit, but we were in such control of that game. I have never that I can recall in my life, and I'm 51 at this point. I don't ever remember watching an IU game just totally relaxed. Like, this is just fun. This is just fun. And then, and then, you know, I'm glad that Zach Edey finally had an experience of what it is like to be Tommy Luce. Like, I'm glad that, like, Zach finally figured out when you're holding the ball beyond the 3-point line and everybody in the arena wants you to shoot it, and he does. And, you know, I'd like to see the decibel levels between Tommy's 2 threes against Iowa years ago and Zach's the other night. That was such an awesome moment. And everybody, I think everybody understands that they're a part of it. They're watching it, but they're also a part of it. And it's just, I've never had an experience watching an IU game like I did in that one. And it was just, Steve Swain, my buddy, he said it right. I did not want it to end. I just wanted them to keep playing. So that was awfully fun last week. And then we'll keep going.
All right. That is the secret sauce of Mackey Arena in Purdue basketball right now. And that is that amazing show that Purdue continues to put on it in it, not at home and away. So we'll look forward to watching the Boilermakers Sunday against Ohio State, which will be a challenge of sorts as well. But we appreciate that. Tim, thanks so much. Always enlightening. We're grateful for your time today. You are a busy man, and we appreciate you making time.
I want to thank you all for watching or listening Saturday simulcast of the February 17th edition. Thanks to our guests, of course, Tom Dienhart, Mike Carmen, providing their expertise, and then also Orlando Eiten and the folks at Bruno's for hosting us for that segment, and of course, Tim Spiker, former Purdue basketball player, leadership advisor and guru. We appreciate them. Next week, we will have we're expected to have kind of the All-American Purdue basketball great show. Rick Mount and Dave Shellhouse will join us, as well as we probably also be looking forward to the Purdue-Michigan men's basketball game. So thanks to Union Club Hotel. Have a great weekend, everybody, and thanks for watching and listening. And if you haven't subscribed to goldenblack.com, it's a good idea. We do have a website, and we appreciate those that do, the thousands that do, but goldenblack.com for the best conversation on Knucklehead Central, but also we believe the best content on Purdue sports on the internet. So again, thank you. No matter how you watch, as Brian Newbert always says, watch, view, digest, ingest our materials, we appreciate you very much. Have a great weekend, all.